This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line, plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This is Issues 2018. I'm Steve McIntosh, and our guest is Sedgwick County District Attorney Mark Bennett. Welcome to Issues 2018.
Good morning.
First question is a real tough one. How long have you been district attorney?
Since January of 13 is when I actually took office.
And what is it about the job that keeps you interested and involved?
Something different every day. And I think, too, I was talking to somebody the other day that the 15 years or so, I guess 15 years in this office and 17 total I did it before I became the district attorney, sort of prepared me for it. And so it's, you feel like you have a hold on the issues that you're going to be dealing with. And there's something nice about coming to work and feeling like you have a grasp on what it is you're supposed to do and what the constraints of the job are. And so the other thing, too, is you get a chance to positively affect your community and affect public safety. So a lot of reasons to find this an attractive job.
Yeah, when you get some experience, okay,
yeah,
you know what the job is, and then it's just plug in those fresh pieces of who and what every day then.
Yeah.
I know the feeling.
Yeah, there you go. After you've done something in a while, you hope you have some capacity for
really?
It.
Really?
So,
well, refresh us a little bit on your background. Where did you start? How did you get to this point in your life?
Sure. Well, that's the old adage that we went from bad to worse, and here we are. So,
yeah.
I started off in college at K-State, and I got to know the county attorney next door in Junction City. He made a great offer to me. He told me I could work for him for free. He promised not to pay me if I promised to show up and work. And so I had an internship like that. Went off to law school, got out, and called him the next day after I passed the bar and asked if I could use him as a reference. He said, sure. The next day he called me and said, my assistant just quit. How would you like to be an assistant Geary County attorney? And so that's how I got into prosecution, came back to Wichita in 97. My wife and I are both from this area and decided we'd come back. I started working in the DA's office in 97 and thought I'd do it for a couple of years, and that's turned into 21 years.
So when you law school, Washburn?
Mm-hmm, correct.
Okay, so you're from this area.
Goddard High School, West Sedgwick County, okay. Kid. So.
Who are some of the important players in the DA's office? I know you're going to say everybody is.
Sure, everybody, but we have 55 lawyers. We have about 70 support staff, and so there are any number of people who make the operation run. In terms of the hierarchy of how the office is set up, it's the district attorney, and then I have three deputies. Ron Pascal is the deputy district attorney in charge of the juvenile division, which includes juvenile offender and child native care. We have Ann Swiegel, who's been in the office a long time, and Ann's the deputy in charge of sort of everything She's the office lawyer. She has a myriad of responsibilities. And then Justin Edwards is the deputy who's in charge of the criminal trial division. And so those are the three deputies. Then we have a number of chief attorneys who are in charge of one unit or another. We've got an appeals division run by Boyd Isherwood. Trinity Muth is in charge of gang unit. Alice Osborne in the sex crimes unit. Robert Short in the economic crimes unit. Aaron Breitenbach is in charge of traffic. I'm probably forgetting somebody. I'll apologize.
You have some big meetings then.
We do.
A lot of coffee going.
Lots of coffee. Donald Longsworth and juvenile offender, and Mark Jordan and the child and care division.
Well, to kind of define the scope of your office's responsibilities.
It's
everything legal.
How much time do you have? Yeah.
Yeah.
So
really.
So the obvious are the criminal cases that people expect us to try, the murders and the rapes and those sort of things. And so we have a 25 attorneys who handle nothing but criminal cases. We have an appeals division that handles all the appeals that come from all those cases. And that's, like I said, Boyd Isherwood and his group of 5 or 6 lawyers. I've got a child needed care division with 5 or 6 lawyers who do nothing but that. We've got the juvenile offender division with 3 lawyers who handle nothing but juvenile offender cases. Traffic's got Aaron's in charge, but we have 3 young attorneys who are or 2 at the moment who handle traffic cases. We've got an attorney who does nothing but care and treatment cases, which I think folks forget, don't think about, but that's the people who are a danger to themselves or others. They are involuntarily committed to Oswaldeman State Hospital typically. But that's a sizable docket in and of itself, and enough of one, frankly, that we needed a person whose full-time attention was on that. So there's any number. We have we also have a consumer fraud division, consumer protection division run by Avery Ellefson, an attorney in our office, and we've got some investigators there. We have an investigative division run by Kelly Otis, a former homicide detective with WPD. And they handle any number of things. One of our primary emphasis, though, for our investigators is financial crimes, because we've got some certified financial crime investigators who certified fraud examiners, I should say, who really assist law enforcement in, the average cop, it has lots of training and lots of things, but you hand them a banker's box full of financial records,
yeah.
And that's going to be either outside the scope of their expertise or, even more to the point, going to take up so much of their time that it's difficult for them to devote to it. So we've got these certified fraud examiners who can help in that respect. So that's a very short answer to the myriad of things that goes on in the office.
You're a district attorney, though. You're not really a county employee. You're a state employee,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, well, actually, I'm paid for by the county.
Paid by the county.
The way it's set up is there are judicial districts all over the state of Kansas.
Right.
So, for instance, south of us, Wellington. That judicial district includes Wellington, Harper, Barber County Medicine Lodge, Kingman. I think Pratt may be in that as well. That is a district. So each of the individual counties within the district have a county attorney. Mr. Spencer's the county attorney down in Wellington. And so he's the county attorney. But I'm in a district. The judicial district is the 18th. And that is comprised solely of Sedgwick County, so it makes me the district attorney because it's a judicial district that's here instead of individual counties.
I've heard this term conviction rate. Is that something you pay attention to?
Not really. I'll be honest with you. And because
it's like keeping score in a football game.
Well, to me, it's what's the old expression? Statistics can be torture to confess anything. The way I look at it is each individual case should be taken up on its own merits. I think people get too hung up on conviction rates, and then they start worried about, I need to convict this case rather than do the right thing with it. Maybe this is a case that shouldn't be a conviction. Maybe there's something wrong with the case. And when offices spend too much time emphasizing conviction rates, then they either pursue cases maybe they shouldn't, or they don't pursue cases they should. I heard years ago there was a very famous district attorney in Kansas whose claim to fame was he never lost a case, and I thought to myself, well, there's a man who knows how to pick his cases. So
really?
If you spend too much time focusing on conviction rates, you're not worried about doing justice as much, at least in my opinion. So we don't emphasize that. I've never have in my literature. If you want to know how many cases we've won, I'm sure we could find out for you. But I'm far more interested in doing the right thing in each individual case.
How often do you actually get into the courtroom? I know that you get in there now and then, don't you?
Yeah, the nobody goes to law school with the dream of becoming an administrator. You know, you go to law school to try cases, and or certainly you go to the DA's office because you like trying cases, and that's why I stayed as long as I did. This year I've tried two homicide cases. One was the Yesenia Sesmas case. She stole, killed Laura Abarca and stole her baby, took her to Dallas, and she was located a couple days later in Dallas with the infant child, baby Sophia. And we tried Ms. Sesmas this last summer. And then just last month I tried a case, attempted capital murder of a young man who violently strangled and raped a seven-year-old. And then just next week I'm trying a murder case in Wichita here, and involving a young woman from WSU, a co-ed who was killed by an ex-boyfriend. And then later this fall I think I'll be trying, taking a part in trying the gentleman who ran over the Officer Arterburn a year or so ago. So my goal is to get into court every year, try as many cases as I can, but some years it's easier than others. I will say I've kind of recognized if I could do it again, one thing I'd do is probably assign myself a few lower-level cases, because when you assign yourself all these high-level and capital cases, et cetera, sometimes it takes a while to get them into court, frankly. And so, but I've managed to try a case, I think, most every year, and several years since I've been DA, I've tried multiple cases.
So why are you doing that? Is it just that you like to do it, or is it, you think it's important?
A couple of three reasons. One, yeah. I like to do it. It's a real, you know, break in the and the action from what I normally do during the course of a day. Number two, I think it's important to show the younger attorneys that the boss actually does have some sense of what he's doing in the courtroom. More to the point, it keeps me, you know, tied to the courtroom. It keeps me sharp, and it helps me give better advice to the younger attorneys when I'm out there doing it myself. I think it's easy to lose touch when you haven't done it for a while. And so for all those reasons, and the final one is I try to try a case with someone else each time, so that I'm you know, seeing what they're doing, seeing how they're doing, occasionally, you know, showing them what I know, hopefully trying to teach a little bit as well along the way. So, no, I think it's important, if at all possible, for me to try, you know, several cases a year, as long as I can keep up the pace.
Now, the high profile crimes and court cases, you got to go to BTK.
Sure.
And you didn't physically try the case, I don't think, but bet you were involved in it, weren't you?
Well, and let's put it this way, everybody in the office had a
really
to do with that case. But no, I mean, that was Mrs. Folsom's case, Kim Parker. I think Kevin O'Connor was involved in that specifically. Mr. Roeder was pretty interested in letting everybody know what he had done, so there was never a trial, but there was that big sentencing hearing where they sort of aired it all out. But no, I certainly remember the time in the office. It was a very interesting situation to be in the office at that time.
National media. Were there all those trucks out there?
I'm telling you, I never saw so many media trucks in my life. It looked like the Super Bowl out in front of the courthouse.
How were those people? Were they generally well-behaved?
You know, I mean, the thing I like about the local media is, you know, Wichita, I'm constantly reminded of what a small, big town this is. I mean, everybody, you're about 3 degrees of separation from everybody in town, and somebody knows somebody who knows somebody. And when you deal with the media, you see a lot of the same faces over and over again. Most of these folks are Wichitans at this point. There's some that are, you know, passing through, but most of them are committed to this community, and they want to do the right thing, and they want to have relationships with our office and with police, et cetera, so that they can continue to get good information. And so we have a real good relationship with them. I think it's a little harder when you're dealing with the national media, because they, you know, they're here for a story and they need to get it, and then they're on to the next one. So you have to, you know, things are a little different with those folks. But by and large, they behaved themselves, as I recall, and it went fine.
You're listening to Issues 2018 on the Entercom radio stations, and our guest is Sedgwick County District Attorney Mark Bennett. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and I'm sure you're aware of that.
Sure.
Any thoughts you'd like to share just on domestic violence?
Well, there's a reason we've got a month devoted to it, because it's an issue that's gone on, you know, for probably time immemorial, and we haven't gotten past it yet in this community or any other. I think the chief of police told me the other day they expect to have somewhere north of 14 to 15,000 domestic violence defined cases under the Wichita PD system this calendar year. Now that doesn't mean everything is, you know, leading to hospitalization but anything from a verbal threat to homicide. To have 14, 15, 16,000 cases in a community of, what do we got, 530,000 people in this community? And granted, that's not all Wichita, but it tells us, you know, tells me we still have work to do. And so that's a concern.
Tell me your feelings, if you will, about the case of the woman the other day, the mother of five children, and she apparently tried to do everything legally to protect herself from her husband. If she wound up dying anyway, that's got to be frustrating for everybody involved.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the bottom line is I will tell you that behind the scenes it has caused many meetings. What can we do to ensure this doesn't happen again? How do we better identify these types of cases? There's something called a lethality assessment that the police department engages in, where they try to identify, is this a guy who's just had too many drinks one night and shouted at everybody, or is this the guy who's going to go to the next level of violence?
Yeah.
There's no crystal ball for these things, but there's an ongoing effort to try to identify. But when you've got, as I said, 14, 15,000 cases a year, it's tough to, you know, lock every single person up, you know, and throw away the key. But to be sure, the system, and by that I mean the police department, the office of the district attorney, the city prosecutor's office, and the municipal courts, and then all of the advocacy groups too. I mean, we all came together last week for a meeting, and we're going to have an ongoing effort to shore up any gaps in the system. Because nobody who works in this field wants to see something like this happen. But these are very difficult cases.
Violent crimes against children are upsetting to most of us.
Sure.
Talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, well, Wichita's lucky in this respect. We have an exploited missing child unit, and the folks who put that into play deserve all the credit. I think that was Richard LeMunyon. Mike Hill was the sheriff at the time, and I want to say it was Clark Owens, actually, was the district attorney back in the early, mid-80s, I guess, about 85, when the EMCU was put into place, Exploited Missing Child Unit. It's now housed in the Child Advocacy Center, which is down there in the old Lincoln Elementary School and just south of Kellogg there. We're lucky in Wichita in this respect. When children are abused physically or sexually or neglected, we have investigators, both with the police department, the sheriff's department, and now it's called DCF. Listeners might remember them as SRS, but it's the Child Protective Services. They have worked together, embedded together in one unit for the last 30-plus years, and so there's a long-standing relationship there and a long history of working together in what the term gets tossed around, best practices, but I think it really does apply to the MCU. We've got an ICAC department, ICAC, which is Internet Crimes Against Children, which is what it sounds like. It's folks who would prey on children through the Internet, through digital media, social media. We have investigators who are devoted to investigating those kind of crimes and know how to get access to cell phones and computers and, you know, all of the digital media that would contain evidence of those types of crimes. So there's a whole host of folks in law enforcement and investigation units devoted to protecting and investigating these types of cases. And then we've got prosecutors on both sides of the street, the city prosecutors, and then who'd handle primarily domestic violence type cases in this respect, but also then any sex crimes or physical abuse cases involving children come to my office, and we've got a unit devoted to that type of prosecution as well.
What is your office seeing in cases involving human trafficking?
There's obviously, you can read about it in the paper, there's still those cases exist. As much light has been shown on that issue over the last, I don't know, 10, probably 12 years. Since the law, the human trafficking law went into effect in Kansas, despite all of the attention drawn to it, the issue does not go away. We just had some hearings, last week, in fact, involving people who were selling other human beings and purchasing other human beings. And so it's an ongoing issue.
We had a story on the news here over the past few days where the police chief had was really scratching his head and showing, I think, some frustration over the amount of gun violence we're seeing over the past year or two.
Sure.
Anything you'd like to share on that?
Well, one thing I would say is, you know, we have a strong ethos in this state, a strong commitment to gun ownership and Second Amendment rights, et cetera, which is fine. But I would just encourage people to remember that with gun ownership and gun rights comes gun responsibility. And I'll defer to the chief to give you the raw numbers, but I know we're pushing 1,000. We talked about this after Officer Deputy Kunze was killed because he was shot with a stolen gun, stolen out of a car. And so that raised within the law enforcement community discussions about that issue, guns being stolen from cars and then used to commit other crimes. And I want to say the chief of police, it was north of 500. I'll say it to be, it's conservative. I'm sure it's, I know it's far more than that, but I don't want to tout a number that's sure. unsubstantiated. But
yeah.
500 plus guns stolen from cars in Sedgwick County in the last calendar year. That's a lot of guns going to the street for, you know, nefarious and illegal uses. So what I would encourage people to do is one thing you can – people ask, what can we do about this sort of thing? Well, one thing to do is maintain your guns. I mean, lock them up. Keep them, don't leave them in your car. You wouldn't – hopefully you wouldn't leave your purse or your wallet sitting on the dash of your car. Please don't leave your gun in the glove box. It's just inviting somebody to come and take it and use it for an illegal sometimes fatal purpose later. So,
sure. So your offices, you touched on this. You've been involved in pursuing consumer fraud cases.
Yes, sir.
Talk about that for just a little bit.
Yeah, well, the Consumer Fraud Act, there's a federal component, but the state act that we work with is Kansas Consumer Fraud, KCPA, Kansas Consumer Protection Act, excuse me. We typically have how they – the genesis of these cases is we'll get a call into the office that someone believes that they've been harmed by a commercial business of some kind or another. Contract was violated. There's any number of things that can take place, frankly. It's very interesting once you kind of dig into it. There's a whole myriad of mechanisms by which these cases can be pursued, but we've got – investigators who look into it. We've got an attorney who handles this. We have several things that can take place, but one of the ones that gets probably the most media coverage is when we enter into what's called a consent decree, when the business agrees that they have violated the person's rights. Just because these are the claims that have come into the office, have to do with used cars. People buying a used car, and you know, there's a reason they buy used cars, because either their credit's not great or they don't have a lot of money, and so they go buy a cheaper car, pay cash for it, and they drive it away. And you know, a lot of times what these folks will tell them is it's you buy it as is. Well, that's not legal in Kansas. There are still warranties. They may be limited compared to a brand new car, obviously. But there are warranties, and there's other things. There's recalls, and they need to be told about the recalls. And when they're not, and it turns out that the car you bought is, you know, GM or Honda or whoever it is issued a recall on it, and you didn't know about it, that can void the contract. So a lot of ways that these cases get investigated, a lot of ways they come to our office, but that's the gist of it. We're trying to protect consumers out in the marketplace.
What's the biggest drug threat right now?
Methamphetamine, all day long. That is a huge issue in this community and many others in the Midwest. The Rust Belt, West Virginia, or Rust Belt over to West Virginia and up the coast, New England, it's opioids. It's heroin. It's, the opioid epidemic. We have them here, and we have had overdoses and overdose deaths. But if there's one thing I could change right now in Sedgwick County and in this part of the country, frankly, it's methamphetamine. We did a quick spot check last year, and 11% of our filed cases had at least one count of methamphetamine involved in it. And when you consider how many people are, committing crimes that are motivated by drug use, you know, the thefts and the property crimes, breaking into cars and sheds and things, garages. Who don't happen to have it on their person when they get caught, I think it's conservatively say that 11% is probably at least half what's really going on, and it's probably far greater than that. So methamphetamine is a real issue.
Let me lighten up a bit.
Sure.
Do you ever watch Judge Judy?
I don't have the time. I'm at work during the day. Sorry.
I do sometimes. Anyway, that's all right. What's the future hold for the DA's office and for Mark Benner? What's a crystal ball? What's going to happen?
Well, there's got two more years of a term to finish up, and we'll see where we're at that point. But in the meantime, this last year has been a tough year, candidly. There have been a lot of big cases, from the swatting case to Lucas Hernandez to the Evan Brewer case, which is being tried right now. What we're this last month or so, it feels like we're just kind of chipping away at all these, finally getting them all to conclusion. Had some success in these cases, and we're going to continue to chip away at these cases. And then, you know, like I said, things like the domestic violence issue, we're certainly going to pivot back to that and make sure that this community is doing everything it can from the law enforcement perspective to attend to that and make sure that this is as safe a community as it can possibly be.
Thanks for spending some time with me. I think if we really want to, we could do a couple, 3 hours.
I suspect we could.
You have a lot of information to share. And I always enjoy talking to you. So thanks for spending some time with us. We appreciate it.
Appreciate
our guest, Sedgwick County District Attorney Mark Bennett. That's all for this edition of Issues 2018. We'll be back next week. Thank you for listening. I'm Steve McIntosh.
Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.